On this edition of WBOI's Field Notes, the Hoosier State will be playing a role in the 2028 Olympic and Paralympic Games, and I'll start with the details on that. Victoria Jacobson from the Journal-Gazette joins us to discuss the latest in spring high school sports tournament season. Then I'll close with notes on Fort Wayne FC, the Tin Caps, and the NBA Finals-bound Indiana Pacers. That's all next on Field Notes. Thank you for joining us this week. I'm Zach Bernard. Earlier this week, it was revealed that Fort Wayne will host the Sitting Paravolley World Cup in October. The tournament is an international event, drawing roughly 500 athletes and officials from 20 countries. It features 16 teams in men's and women's divisions, and is considered a precursor event to the 2028 Paralympic Games in Los Angeles. This is the first time the event has ever been held in the United States. The opportunity comes as a partnership between World Paravolley, Visit Fort Wayne, the City of Fort Wayne, and Turnstone Center. Events will be held at Turnstone's Plasman Athletic Center. In the announcement, Visit Fort Wayne projects an economic impact of $2.3 million for Allen County. They're seeking volunteers for the tournament, which will take place October 12th through 18th. And on the subject of the 2028 Games, Indianapolis will once again host the U.S. Olympic swimming trials. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Samantha Horton reports the event will return to Lucas Oil Stadium after it was held there last year.
In 2024, the stadium was transformed with the installation of three temporary pools, one 50-meter competition pool, and two warm-up pools, welcoming more than 285,000 fans. The estimated economic impact of the 2024 U.S. Olympic swimming trials was over $130 million. Indiana Sports Corps President Patrick Talty says the success felt throughout the city makes him excited to bring it back.
This is probably the epitome of our mission here in Indianapolis. We drove economic vitality by showcasing our downtown and driving record crowds to our restaurants and hotels.
With 3 years to plan, officials say the biggest challenge will be to top the bar set in 2024. I'm Samantha Horton.
And joining us once again is Victoria Jacobson from the Journal-Gazette. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Track and field state finals are this weekend. What can we expect to see?
The track and field state finals will be held this weekend at North Central High School. That is a change from previous years when it's been held at the IU campus in Bloomington. But we should still see an awful lot of fast times. I've heard that it is a fast track. So let's get into some of the contenders that we have from here in northeastern Indiana. We've talked a lot about Mallory Weller from Concordia. And no surprise to anybody, she is coming into both the 1600 and the 3200 as the favorite. She is the top seed in the 1600 based on regional performances. She ran a time of 4 minutes, 43.81 seconds at the Carroll Regional last week. And then she's also the top seed in the 3200 in 10:27.09. That is definitely something to watch. It's a hard double. It's going to take a lot out of you, especially if the weather is pretty warm. But we have seen really impressive things from her before. The other athlete who we're kind of expecting to be a contender in multiple events, someone we've also talked about, is Carroll's Nadia Ford. She's a sophomore. She doesn't have the top seed time in the 100 meters based on the regional performance. That would be Kennedy Bradley of Chesterton at 11.71 seconds. Nadia qualified in 11.90 seconds, but Nadia has hit that 11.71 time this year, and that is one of the faster times from across the state, from across the season. So she's definitely in position to be a contender there. And then Nadia is the top seed in the 200 meter dash in 24.02. That is the fastest time in the state this season. She's also a member of the Carroll 4x1 team, which is the defending champ in that event. Now, unlike swimming, at the track and field state championships, relays are just worth the regular 10 points. They're not worth double like they are in some swimming events, but still winning a relay, really fun. It's a great thing to do with your team. Also very helpful in the team competition where Carroll's not the favorite. That's probably Carmel and HSC, but definitely contender if things get a little bit crazy. The last person that I want to point out on the girls' side is Gwen Howard of Whitco. She is the top seed in the shot put. She had a mark of 47 feet 3 inches at the regional last week, and her season best is 48 feet 4.4 inches. So again, someone to watch out for there. And she is the 7th seed in the discus, so could also very well score there. Let's go over to the boys' side. Boys are going to be competing on Friday, the girls on Saturday. Shot put, we also got the top seed. This area is good at shot put. I don't know why, but Weston Ott of Churubusco, he is the top seed in the shot put. He had a mark of 63 feet, 3 inches from regionals. And the 5th seed is Cameron Kaufman of Warsaw. 7th is James Leiter, also of Warsaw. So this could be a place where Warsaw could pick up a couple points. And then all three of those athletes are also qualifying, also seeded in the top 5, actually, in the discus. So it could be a really big day to pick up some points in the throws. And then, you know, Warsaw is maybe a dark horse, but also a contender for the team title on the boys' side because of the strength in those field events. The high jump, Warsaw's Jordan Randall has pretty much been dominant in that event this year. He is the top seed at 7 feet, 1 inch. That is, well, it's not miles above the competition. It's several inches above the competition. But in high jump, that counts for quite a bit. He also has the top jump in the state this year at 7 feet, 1 1/4 inch. So that could be a place where Warsaw has an opportunity to pick up 10 points and have themselves a state champion. And then, again, another Warsaw standout, Jackson Gackenheimer, is seeded third in the 3200 in 9 minutes, 6.86 seconds based on his regional time.
So track and field season is nearing the finish line, but other spring sports are continuing through their tournament season. Let's take a look at tennis. You covered semi-state over the weekend. What did we see there?
Yes, so Homestead hosted a semi-state. It's a little bit of an unusual format in that there are two semi-state trophies presented to two different teams at each semi-state site. Homestead had a chance to win against Westfield. Carroll had a chance in their match against Penn. However, this wasn't the year for either to go through. Last year, Carroll just snuck through. They had a 3-2 victory over Penn. This year, the Kingsmen flipped the tables, 3-2 victory over Carroll. Carroll won at both doubles positions. Actually, neither of those doubles teams have dropped a single set this year, so I believe they're a combined 54-0, those two doubles duos, and haven't dropped a set. So they are 108-0 on sets, but that just wasn't enough to get it done against the Kingsmen, although the Carroll number one doubles team will be advancing through to the individual state tournament. And on the other set of courts, Homestead lost 5-0 to Westfield, which is one of the top teams in the state this year. So the end of the road for both of those teams as far as the team tournament goes.
It was a big week on the diamond for you. Let's start with baseball sectionals, which wrapped up earlier this week, and Bishop Dwenger's success continues.
Yeah, so this was the second sectional title in a row for Bishop Dwenger, which won over Leo in the Garrett sectional final. Bishop Dwenger standout pitcher Lucas Collins, who is committed to Dayton. He had 12 strikeouts, and the one run allowed came in the third and was technically an unearned run because it came after what could have been a third out on a infield pop-up that was dropped. So other than that, a pretty clean day for the Bishop Dwenger Saints, and they are headed through to regionals.
And they're not the only ones to repeat their success this year. Carroll Softball won its third straight regional title, and they did it in a pretty exciting way.
Yes, so Carroll pitcher Taylor Danley, maybe she heard about all those strikeouts and thought that she could maybe do a little bit better. She didn't quite hit 12, but that's because the Chargers only needed 5 innings before the 10-run rule was invoked. She punched out the first 7 batters that she saw on her way to a perfect game. Didn't need a whole lot of help from her defense, although they did come and back her up when necessary. Finished the game with 11 strikeouts. Also hit a 3-run homer to break open the game in the third inning in what was eventually a 10-0 Carroll victory. And then once that was all over, there was a little bit more as her coach informed her that she had made first team All-State. So all in all, a really exciting day for the Carroll Chargers, who won their third straight regional title.
So where do these tournaments go from here?
The baseball and softball tournaments are a little bit staggered. Right now, softball is essentially one round ahead of the baseball tournament. We will be having semi-state tournaments this Saturday. So Carroll, as we just talked about, is going through in the 4A state tournament. They are going to be playing number 4 Crown Point at Harrison West Lafayette this Saturday. If they win that first semi-state game, they can go to the championship at 7 p.m. We have another winner in Columbia City. The Eagles will be playing Hanover Central at Twin Lakes in their semi-state semifinal. And then Central Noble, which beat South Adams on Tuesday, the Cougars will be going to the Kokomo semi-state to play Rossville. So that is on the softball side. The baseball side, they have not played their regionals yet. That'll be happening on Saturday. So we have Homestead versus Snyder, Norwell versus Bishop Dwenger for 3A, Adams Central versus Westview in 2A, and then at Class A, Canterbury versus Triton. And as we're recording this, they have not announced which teams are going to be at which sites yet. So we'll find that out later in the week.
In the heat of IHSAA postseason, Victoria Jacobson is helping us make sense of all of it for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Thank you, as always, for being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
Last week, Brianna Barrow did a great job filling in and helping me take some time off. At the end of the show, she said this.
Zach Bernard will be back next week, hopefully previewing the Pacers in the NBA Finals.
Well, on Saturday night, they punched their ticket in a dominant Game 6 victory over the Knicks at home. It's the Pacers' first trip to the NBA Finals since the very, very good 2000 team that unfortunately had to face the Kobe Shaq Lakers and lost. Their task this time around ain't much easier. The Oklahoma City Thunder are widely seen as the NBA's best team this year, not only finishing with the season's best record, but also mowing down opponents in the playoffs with ease. Oh, and they have this year's MVP, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's an astonishing talent. OKC has home court advantage for the 7-game set, so the series will move to Gainbridge for games 3 and 4 next Wednesday and Friday. If necessary, it will return on Thursday, June 19th, for Game 6. Game 1 is tonight. Tip-off is set for 8:30. I do think the Pacers have the best chance of any Eastern Conference team to beat the Thunder. They play a fast pace, they have experience in all the right places, they've demonstrated an unpredictability that has been advantageous for them the last 2 years. It's a very exciting time. I'm sure they're rooting for us in Seattle, too. With Caitlin Clark sidelined with a quad injury, the Fever have struggled a bit. After dropping 3 in a row, they did manage to pull out a win in their first Commissioner's Cup game of the year Tuesday against the Washington Mystics, so maybe things are coming together. Still no timetable for 22's return as of this recording, but the games carry on. They'll face the Chicago Sky at the United Center Saturday at 8, that should be fun. Then they're headed back to Atlanta to face the Dream Tuesday night. You may remember the two teams already had two great contests earlier this season. Circling back home, Fort Wayne FC remains undefeated on the year, picking up their 4th win Wednesday night against WV Chaos. Only one game in the next week, they're back home at Bishop Darcy Stadium Saturday night at 7, hosting the Dayton Dutch Lions. These two teams met opening night on May 17th, Fort Wayne FC won 2-0. It's been an up and down week for the Tin Caps as of this recording. Since last Thursday, it's been win, loss, win, loss, win. They're hovering around 500 for the year, good enough for 4th in the division, but only 3 games behind Lansing for 2nd. The Tin Caps will finish off their series against the Beloit Sky Carp this weekend before returning home for a 6-game set against South Bend next week. That's all for Field Notes this week. Field Notes comes out every Thursday. We'll see you next week. I'm Zach Bernard.
Music for Field Notes is produced by Jack Ankenbrook. You can support this podcast anytime at wboi.org/donate. You and I are listening to WBOI.